All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening and welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. We're on your radio until 10 o'clock this evening. We've got an interview from 8 o'clock with Railteen Shreeves. Now, if anyone ever asks the quiz question, who was the first woman to score points for Ireland in international rugby? The answer to that question is...
Railteen
Shreeves. What is it, Nathan?
Railteen Shreeves.
Correct, well done. How did you know? Gosh. Fantastic.
Second bite there.
So she is the first person to have ever scored points for the Ireland women's team. She played at the 1994 Women's Rugby World Cup, which was the first time that Ireland entered the competition. It's an extraordinary story, and that's coming up after 8 o'clock. After 9 o'clock, we've got a brilliant La Liga doubleheader for you. We're going to have Steve McManaman on the line to look ahead to the new season beginning this weekend. He's involved in Disney Plus's coverage. And Graham Hunter is also going to put a bit of meat in the bone with regards to some of the big talking points going into the season in Spain. Our number is 0879 180 180. If you want to get in touch with us this evening, Nathan Murphy, who you've already heard, is with us. Hello, Nathan.
And how are you?
Cameron Hill, how are you?
Not too bad.
This is your idea. Railteen Shreeves is somebody that you put us onto. This was a great find, to be fair. You did the slot, which I'm sure everybody is aware of, with Pat Kenny. Like, you've given us your sloppy seconds, which is fine, to be fair. But you did a piece with Pat Kenny there last week about the history of the Irish women's rugby team in the World Cup. And you spoke to Railteen.
Yes, indeed. Thursdays after 11 for anyone interested, by the way, just to get that plug in. But yeah, was speaking to Railteen, fascinating character, just in terms of she had played for Millwall Lionesses for 10 years before she switched to rugby, and then is played in the second ever international Ireland ever played, the Ireland women's team, which is almost a year to the day from their first game. So they play Scotland in the same place that Scotland and England played the first ever men's international in 1871 in Raeburn Place. And almost a year later, that was on the 14th of February 1993, 13th of February 1994, they go up to Ravenhill, a horrible day by all accounts in terms of weather. And Railteen is part of the team that plays then. She kicks Ireland's first points against Wales in March of that year. And then they're hoping to go to this World Cup, which is meant to be on in the Netherlands. And then the Netherlands Women's Rugby Union was affiliated with the men's at the time. And the IRB basically told them, we're not 100% sure on this second World Cup. The first one had taken place in 91 and wasn't sanctioned by the IRB, now World Rugby. And they were kind of holding out on the Dutch about whether they were going to give approval. Apparently it was going to be March before they would find out if they'd get approval. And the competition was due to be in April. So the Netherlands shelved it, said it's not worth the risk. Scotland step onto the breach. They've 90 days to organise this World Cup. And I was talking to Sue Brody, who was one of the organisers who was playing for Scotland at the time, and said, look, I'm chair of the Scottish Women's Rugby Union. Why don't I use my power? And they did. It was, by all accounts, a fantastic couple of weeks. Everyone in Scottish rugby seemed to have mucked in, so they got all their venues for free. And Railteen's account of how Ireland ended up playing at that tournament, despite it not going ahead in the first place and then being reorganised, and despite the Irish Women's Rugby Football Union not backing them, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, there's loads in it. So the World Cup that almost did not happen does happen in 94, and it was the first time Ireland took part in it. So some really good stories about that, like so Fiona Steed doubling as a player, physiotherapist as well in that team as Railteen, which is the Irish, of course, for Little Star, coming up after 8 o'clock. I've never spoken to a Railteen before. Born to an Irish mother in London. So, I mean, it's always the Irish parents abroad that come up with the most original name. So, Railteen Shreeves, feature interview after 8 o'clock.
That's a great name.
It's a great name, isn't it?
I like it.
It really is. You are sitting here as a man who's got the two hottest tickets in town over the course of this week. You've got an Oasis ticket for this weekend, Nathan, which, you know, never
mind. Just
one. But you've also got a ticket for tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
You are involved in hosting it, so I guess you've...
Front row, on stage. Which I'm not sure if that will happen with Oasis. It seems unlikely.
That you'll be invited on stage?
you know, slim chance.
Slim chance.
Do you do that?
Maybe more for Robbie Williams the week after.
Yeah.
Quite possibly.
What's happening tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, we're live at the Sugar Club. John Giles, a night of celebration. The farewell to John Giles, who, as we know, earlier in the summer announced his retirement from punditry after well over 20 years with us here and Off the Ball.
So we're having him a year of Owen to go, ugh.
Yeah.
Not even years with Nathan.
10 months.
Yeah. Everything was fine while I was here every Thursday night. And then Owen comes in and, well, that guy, mm-hmm. you know, he said, no more.
Yeah, I've retired many a person in my life.
But despite all that, Owen is also going to co-present tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So we could get a little bit awkward. I haven't actually told John this yet, so it's going to be quite the surprise, but he's like, who's this guy?
I thought I was speaking to you every week, Nathan.
Who's this guy?
Down the phone line.
It might be a little bit awkward. Yeah, so we have a brilliant night lined up. We have a few special guests, a few former teammates of John's through the years, some people to put into context the brilliance of John Giles and his importance to Irish football and to Irish society going on for 70 years at this stage. It sold out in, I think, less than 10 minutes. And much like Oasis, and what you're hoping will happen with Oasis, production tickets own, a couple of them have become available. So if you're a super fan, I mean a John Giles super fan, you know, you need to be Leeds United going back to the 60s. Super fan. Drop me an email, nathan.murphy@offtheball.com, and I'll see what I can do for you.
If you can name the sequence of passes in that Leeds Southampton clip, like where the player, who gets what ball from what player throughout, you probably get the tickets. That's the challenge.
I think that's fairly simple.
Is Cameron allowed to enter?
Cameron absolutely can enter.
Yeah.
We get you front row.
Absolutely.
Front row for you, Cameron. Absolutely.
There'll be no news tomorrow. Sorry, guys.
So we're really excited about that. You've no ticket for Oasis, which is, I've only one ticket. Mm-hmm. So I just bought one ticket for myself. It's all I could get when the tickets went on sale.
How is that possible? When you're in, are you not in?
Like, could you well, not, that's like, what I thought. What, so, like everybody else, I was on the, you know, million in the queue type thing. And suddenly, whoa, I'm there. And I'm like, how many tickets can I buy? I'll go for four. No, maximum one.
Oh,
what? So I have one ticket in, I think it's the Hogan stand. So it's going to be me and some of my new friends.
Lower Hogan.
Who I hope they like my singing.
Saturday night?
Saturday night.
If you're in the Lower Hogan on Saturday night, let us know. Nathan,
or if anybody wants to swap for a standing ticket. You see, it's probably easy to swap for a standing ticket for a seating ticket. Some people just want to relax a bit more and sit down when they want. You just can't trust anything these days, though. I don't want to be sending my ticket online to somebody and then they don't send it back and I'm screwed and I'm left with nothing. You just can't trust the people these days.
No, you absolutely cannot. I've even heard stories of some very trustworthy websites having had scammers infect their mainframe and a lot of legitimate looking accounts selling duds. So
you haven't been sorted yet, no?
No, I haven't. I put out the request on Instagram earlier on, which is, I got one response and it's the usual, £560, which feels...
Listen, there's a lot of corporate boxes there, Owen. Me and you in there, and I'll give my ticket to charity then.
Okay.
And then I'll have someone to talk to.
Ideal. I will see you there. I've definitely been kind of like refreshing on Ticketmaster all day, and 493 seems to be the going rate. It's always, I don't know why it's that specific number, but that seems to be the reason.
I don't understand though, because, and somebody might explain, I know that ticket reselling is obviously a big thing right now, and I've used it to my advantage at times in America where you'll get a game for a baseball game on a Monday night for like $8.
Yeah.
But Ticketmaster, the email they sent, if you want to sell on your tickets, sell them for face value to a true fan this way. Yet then every time I go online, it's £480.
Yeah, I don't understand.
So who's making the money here?
Yeah, what is face value?
Have you seen Oasis before?
I've seen Oasis a few times before, yeah. I saw Oasis at Lansdowne Road in 2000. I was an Oasis super fan, so when they played their gigs in the Point, was it 97, late 96, 97? It was the even hotter, I would say, than these tickets. There just wasn't the black market in the same way. So we left school on the Friday, 2 o'clock, got the bus to Castlebar. Was it Downtown Records in Castlebar?
Indeed.
Started the queuing, 2 p.m., slept overnight outside Downtown Records. Tickets on sale 9 o'clock the next morning. Oh, yeah, we've got 10 tickets for the first 10 people. And that's how ticket selling used to go, which was slightly more frustrating than the lying in bed on a Saturday morning when tickets went on sale and only been able to get the one of them. Mm. So, yeah. But the two or three times I saw them, Slane, Oxygen, felt like they were sort of going through the motions. They were also playing a lot of their newer albums at the time.
Which, crucially, they're not doing at the moment.
Whereas this is... The last 8-10 songs of this is some of the greatest set listing we've ever seen.
And are you pacing yourself throughout for when you're singing? Are you belting it like from minute one going and seeing how far you can go? Or is it a marathon, not a sprint? And you wait until a certain selection of songs comes up before you really give it full throttle.
No, I think knowing exactly what the set list is, and it doesn't seem like they're throwing in any surprises and there's no special song because they're in Dublin that they're going to play for us, I'll save myself for that like final stretch.
If you were a true fan, would you not be hoping for like a surprising final 10 songs? Are you a bit of a casual?
I would have thought I was hardcore. Like, I like all the B-sides and all of that. But I just, if it's old B-sides and stuff, I can get on board with it. But no, I think they're even playing some of the best, better B-sides. And it's just some of the new stuff. No, and none of the solo stuff.
Apparently they're in great form. As in, like, the quality
getting
has
on.
Been... No,
the
not
voice
that at all.
Is good.
Yeah, voice is good, as in, like, how you describe, like, a football team. They're in good form.
Well,
on
speaking
the pitch.
Of football, I don't know if you remember this, Cameron. Paul Arthur's Bonehead, his father, Ben, from Mayo, and he used to referee my games when I was a kid.
No way.
Jeez. Yeah, Ben Arthur's was sort of leading referee in the Mayo District Football League back in the mid-90s. So our sort of under 14, under 15 games. Now, Ben at that stage was probably 70. But still loved his football, refereeing us every week. Absolutely loved it. Great ref, we'll say. Great ref.
Bonehead, you know what to do. Your dad's been complimented as a referee. Send in some free tickets.
Yeah, please. There's no shame on this station at all.
It's only 2 degrees of separation to a very strong connection with Nathan.
Sorry. 2 tickets for Oasis for 2 tickets for John Giles.
Yes.
Oh,
there we go.
I will let somebody else host the show alongside Nathan Murphy tomorrow.
No.
If you give me a pitch ticket for Saturday in Croke Park. That is a deal.
What's the limit of things we can offer up in this show to get you to Oasis?
I'll do anything.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Shall we talk some sport? Okay. Shall we do some news round? The news round, of course, is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Where do you want to start tonight, Cameron?
Well, Rory McIlroy has revealed today that he's turned down the chance to be a future playing Ryder Cup captain at a future event. In fact, shot it down. Was how he phrased it. So this year's US captain Keegan Bradley will play at next month's event in Bettpage, of course. And McIlroy feels the demands of the role would be too much to balance with also playing.
I just think the commitments that a captain has the week of, you think about the extra media that a captain has to do, you think about the extra meetings that the captains have to do with the vice captains, with the PGA of America in Keegan's case. Preparing your speech for the opening ceremony. There's a lot of things that people don't see that the captain does the week of the Ryder Cup, especially now that the Ryder Cup has become so big. If you had said 20 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, I think it was probably possible to do. But with how big of a spectacle and everything that's on the line in a Ryder Cup now, I just think it would be a very difficult position to be in. So. I just think for those reasons. And then, the captain isn't going to be on the course all day. So really the captain's only going to be able to play one session on Friday, one session on Saturday. Would you rather not have a player that has the flexibility to go twice if he's playing well? And, there's a lot of different things that go into it. And that's why I think, look, it's just my opinion, but I think it would just be very difficult to do.
Sounds like a lot of things there to distract Rory McIlroy from his inner monologue that has often, forced him to play really poor golf.
I think Rory knows exactly what he's doing, which is putting some thoughts into the head of Keegan Bradley, who's going to have to make a decision in 2 weeks' time as to whether he picks himself as a player in the Ryder Cup. And right now, all of the signs are that he will. And it is causing a level of disharmony, I think, around the American team that maybe raises questions about what will happen at Bethpage, because they are going to be the strong favourites. Home advantage is absolutely everything. It's the overriding factor all of the time as to who wins the Ryder Cup. So America had a better team 2 years ago in Rome, but they simply couldn't deal with the conditions, with the course setup that Europe put in place, with Europe having the home advantage. They never came over in advance and played. They never prepared properly. Europe, I think, will do all of that, but still at Bethpage, home advantage should be everything. But this is becoming quite the sideshow. And Scottie Scheffler was talking today, and he was been asked about the Ryder Cup, and he gave sort of a snotty, I'm here to play the BMW Championship, the Ryder Cup's a month away. Why are you asking me questions about the Ryder Cup? It's like, because it's the biggest thing in golf for the remainder of the year. And everyone wants to know what you think Keegan Bradley should do. I put this to Shane Ryan my co-host on the Ryan line a few weeks ago, because the Ryder Cup, everything about it is sort of hindsight as to what worked, and then you take it for the next time. So McGinley obviously transformed everything in 2014 at Gleneagles in terms of the level of preparation that he put into it and the level of data, and Europe have continued that. And Eduardo Molinari, former player, former Ryder Cup player, is sort of one of the leading lights in world golf in terms of data analysis, and he's key to the European side. And now the Americans have followed suit and they're big into the data. But if Keegan Bradley was to be successful as a playing captain, why not Rory McIlroy in 2 years' time at Adair Manor as a playing captain? It would prove that maybe the captaincy isn't the be-all and end-all. And Europe are in a sort of sticky spot at the moment because of what happened with Liv and the sort of succession plan that you would have expected of Westwood, Poulter, Garcia being next in line. None of them are there. None of them are available. I think right now Justin Rose is the likely captain at Adair Manor in a couple of years' time. He's 45, he'll be 47 by then. But if Keegan Bradley worked, well, why not have your biggest star? Remember, it is ultimately an exhibition. And if you had Tiger Woods as the American captain and Rory McIlroy as the European captain, that's box office, baby.
Yeah, that would be absolutely sensational. How often have we come this close to a captain being an unignorable pick for his own team?
Oh, I think the last time was Arnold Palmer, and that was way before the Ryder Cup became what it is now. All the things that McIlroy described that the captain has to do, never mind picking your wild cards, picking your pairings, having to pick your pairings for the afternoon session while the morning session is taking place. Now, again, the level of analysis is such, they'll have a plan in place and they'll have to stick to it. But does that mean that maybe Bradley can't play the morning sessions? Because, again, he's going to have to make that decision of what happens in the afternoon, and what if somebody's just stinking the joint out and you need to make a change and you're not seeing any of that. But his form has dipped. It's become a more difficult spot for him now, because probably a month ago, 6 weeks ago, he won the Travelers Championship, you'll remember, against Tommy Fleetwood. And it was, whoa, this guy is probably one of the top 4 or 5 Americans in the world right now. He might qualify automatically. He has to be on the team. It could be a case that he's sort of pick 11 or 12. And does he go for that? Interesting twist is that he was screwed over completely 2 years ago. He wasn't picked. You might have seen it in Full Swing, where he wasn't sort of in Zach Johnson's inner circle with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. And because of that, it felt like he was left out. And then it was a complete shock he got the captaincy in the first place. Felt like they just had nobody else. And somehow they turned to Keegan Bradley and said, please do this. So it's just it's an unnecessary distraction for America right now. And again, we'll read so much into it. The problem is, if they lose the first couple of sessions, all of this becomes the only talking point in town is, whoa, why have we got a playing captain? And bring it on.
Yeah, that would be a beautiful wrinkle. So just remind us again, what needs to happen for him to be an automatic pick?
Oh, I'm fairly sure him being an automatic pick is out of the question. This is their last week for qualification, okay, the BMW Championship. So even if he wins this week, I'm not sure it'll force him quite in. He'd definitely be close. If he wins this week, there's no doubt that they pick him.
What's happened himself to Keegan Bradley this year? Like, is it a situation where this has kind of like lifted the pressure off his shoulders, where he's like, I can't possibly make the Ryder Cup team, therefore...
Well, he was thereabouts 2 years ago. So it's not as if, again, Keegan Bradley had suddenly been this major winner who was quite popular on tour and had fallen off a cliff. Even Ricky Fowler, you could argue, had fallen more off a cliff than Keegan Bradley. And let's give him the job because, he's a steady pair of hands and he needs this. He wasn't far away 2 years ago. He arguably should have been on the team. And his golf has just been really consistent since then. He's won a tournament, in the last, 2 months at this stage. So it was a bizarre selection. It did seem as though maybe Tiger Woods didn't want it at this time, maybe with the various injuries he had. And he's now sort of taking on Roy's role as sort of the leading player on the tour committees and that, and just didn't want the hassle, maybe saving himself for Adair Manor because of his very close friendship with JP McManus. But the Bradley decision literally caught everybody completely off guard. And maybe it has sort of freed him up that he's not thinking about his own game as much and he's playing really good golf. And unless one of the sort of other 3 or 4 in the mix for the final couple of places do something spectacular this week, I think he is going to pick himself.
Cameron, you have one other piece of golf news for us.
Yeah, so the lineup for next month's Irish Open has been confirmed. McIlroy will be among the field for that, as will 5-time major winner Brooks Koepka. Fellow Live golfers Sergio Garcia and Tyrrell Hatton will be joining him at the K Club. the organisers have announced today, while home favourites Shane Lowry, Potter Carrington and Seamus Power will join McIlroy. They're also due to play at the Maynooth course, with the Open getting underway on September 4th.
Good lineup.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's one of the real peculiarities of the current golfing world.
That is great for the Irish
even
Open.
Though, exactly, even though that the European Tour are far more in bed with the PGA Tour, because of the legalities of it, LIV players can still play on the European Tour. There's appeals processes going on. There's fines being paid by LIV. Now, LIV said they're going to stop paying the fines. The players will have to look after it themselves after this season. But it does give the opportunity for the likes of Koepka and Garcia, and maybe a few more between now and then, to come and play at the Irish Open. It gives them a chance to win world ranking points. And even though the Irish Open is, what, 3 weeks before the Ryder Cup, the European Ryder Cup team has been picked before that, which is just so frustrating. It makes absolutely no sense that they don't wait another week and have the Irish Open and have the PGA at Wentworth and then make their decision on the wild card. So the Ryder Cup team will have been picked before the Irish Open, which means because of that, aside from the Irish guys, I don't think too many of the top Europeans will play. None of the top PGA Tour players are likely to come over. You still have Rory McIlroy as the number one draw in world golf. But like, Brooks Koepka is a five-time major champion, and he's a superstar. So Brooks Koepka is going to draw a huge crowd. I think it's sold out already Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the K Club. So tickets there on Thursday. Sergio Garcia obviously divides opinion. Sergio's in the mix for a wild card, probably unlikely for Europe, but still in the mix. And yeah, I think we'll probably see a few more of those LIV players come and really flesh out the field.
Okay, there are loads of football stories that we'll get to after the break with Cameron and Nathan. Before that, it is time for the Cash Machine.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing, use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.
Welcome back to Wednesday night's news round. Cameron, you're bringing us on to the football next.
Yes, indeed. And the Shamrock Rovers manager, Stephen Bradley, has revealed that Jack Byrne's omission from the squad to play Balkany tomorrow isn't due to injury. So Rovers are 1-0 down in the tie heading into tomorrow's Conference League qualifier second leg at Tallaght Stadium. The pair reportedly had a disagreement during preparations for the league match with Derry City earlier this month. Bradley refused to give out any more details on the matter when speaking to the press today. Speaking to Shamrock Rovers TV, he's looking for a big improvement from last week's performance in Kosovo.
Look, we know what Balkany are going to bring. We knew before the first game. We just got to make sure that we hit our levels and we perform to the level that we know we can. If we do that, everything else will look after itself. It's not about scoring early. It's about playing the game, respecting what they're good at. And when the opportunities come, we take them. But it's not about, like I said, looking to go all out and score early on. That's not what we're about. It's about, like I said, being patient, understanding that they've got quality and respecting that. And when we get our moments, to take them.
What's going on here?
Yeah, there have been quite a few rumours over the last week or so around Jack Byrne and either a fallout or a injury. And it seems clear now from the reports that there was more of a fallout ahead of the Derry game around Jack Byrne potentially not being in the starting team and his frustration with that. And whatever has happened since has obviously escalated quite rapidly, that, you know, he wasn't even in the squad for the game last week, won't be in the squad for the game this week. And you'd wonder what his long-term future now is at Shamrock Rovers. It really couldn't come at a worse time in terms of what they're trying to do in Europe. Like, Jack Byrne won't get player of the season, but I think he has been the most important player in the league this season, because his return to full fitness and form sort of 10 games into the campaign coincided with Shamrock Rovers going on that run that separated them from everybody else and playing the best football that we've seen so far this season. And he was absolutely instrumental in that. Funnily enough, while he would definitely make an impact over these European games, I do wonder if he would have been in the starting 11 for the biggest European games for tomorrow night. I think Stephen Bradley last season, through that Conference League run, albeit Jack not being fully fit for any of it, you know, found that maybe a very athletic midfield was more necessary than a technically gifted midfield, which Jack Byrne unquestionably brings. But yeah, it's a bit of a sideshow at just the wrong time ahead of a huge game for Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night, where like they're under pressure now. Generally, they've been very good at winning the home ties and that being enough for them. And then next week, you know, going back into the playoff, toughest possible tie they could get against Portuguese side Santa Clara, where they're going to be, you know, very much the underdogs for that. You know, having a Jack Byrne shaped hole in your squad is not great timing.
A strained relationship on that front, a beautiful new relationship on another front. John in Dublin has been in touch to say, I'm in the Lower Hogan on my own too. I know nobody going. Can't wait to meet my new bestie, Nathan. John, we'll give you Nathan's address and phone number, and you can get in touch with Nathan and you can strike things up before Saturday. Pint beforehand? Where are you and John going to go?
Where would you recommend for our first pre-Oasis date?
I don't know. It's
Into the Boar's Head.
Yeah.
Quiet Corner upstairs.
Quiet Corner, you can get onto Hugh.
What's your favourite song?
Yeah.
You take this one, I'll take that one.
Yeah.
You can finish
every second lyric.
Absolutely. You're
arm in arm.
Oh, we've been doing the Poznan.
The Poznan.
On your own.
On my own. Oh, can you imagine the humiliation I'm going to face when everyone's doing the Poznan and I sort of turn around and go to put my arms around someone who's just, no, everyone's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
We have had no offers for Oasis tickets just yet. 0879 180 180. I'm still looking as of the last 30 minutes.
You're so desperate, you're tempted to give your actual mobile number out.
100%. If we get to the end of this hour with no ticket offers, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Right, to the transfer market, cross-channel, Cameron, and I mean, your own Leeds United have got a new addition.
Yeah, in the form of former Everton striker Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's set for a medical, at least, at Elland Road. He's reached an agreement to join the newly promoted side on a free transfer. So the 28-year-old ended his 9-year stint with the Toffees back in June, admitting it was an incredibly difficult decision to leave the club. He scored 71 goals in 273 games for the Toffees after joining from Sheffield United in 2016.
You staying up, so? That's championship next season avoided.
I don't know.
His goals.
Did the Leeds recruitment team look at Patrick Bamford and go, do you know what? We need another inconsistent and prone to injury striker for the next season. It's tough. I mean, like, it's funny because Calvert-Lewin and Bamford's kind of purple patch or their high watermark really came at exactly the same time, if you remember. And Calvert-Lewin under Ancelotti was pretty much unstoppable, and there was a whole talk around, wow, this guy should be a regular for England. Now he has 11 caps to Patrick Bamford's one, so he might outrank him there, but they do need a striker. Was that the Aviva on Saturday? Brilliant, brilliant occasion, really enjoyable. But Joel Pirou just probably doesn't have the instincts that he might have had maybe 2 years ago when he was in the Championship. They were in for Rodrigo Muniz from Fulham, and it looks like he's going to go to Atalanta. Another guy, Paicho, decided that playing in a potential relegation battle in Yorkshire wasn't preferable to going and playing Champions League football with Marseille this season. So I think Leeds are just reckoning with that old idea of they are a relegation side. Not many teams want to go. And maybe they're suffering from the sins of the last couple of teams that went up from the Championship that have gone straight back down, that it's going to be a tricky, tricky year. But at the same time, they do need forward options, and it's a bit of a catch-22. Like, they have a solid enough midfield, and it seems like they've got a goalkeeper now and proper centre-backs, but if you're going to bring the likes of West Ham and Brentford down and maybe bring them into the relegation scrap and survive, you're going to need goals.
Nathan's eyes just have a glazed look after a while, because he's just, you're giving a compelling case for Leeds United. And of course, Nathan Murphy, as a Premier League commentator, cares if Leeds United stay up or if they get relegated this year. But more importantly, he's thinking to himself, has he persuaded me to include Dominic Calvert-Lewin in my fantasy team? It's all Nathan's banging on about this evening.
Yeah, I've wasted few hours over the week so far, but it's going to increase significantly. Post John Giles tomorrow night, I go straight home, late night of fantasy football, swatting up. There's a lot of YouTube channels been watched in my house at the moment. Me and you are in quite a semi-serious league.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we're semi-serious is in, like, there's a decent amount of cash that goes
decent
into it.
Decent amount of cash. Yeah. I won a decent amount of it on the monthly prizes.
You could purchase an Oasis ticket if you won a couple of
prizes. It paid for my
prizes.
Oasis ticket, yes. Yeah. Which was quite good. Yeah, it's this year, because of the sort of radical change to the top teams, all of the best sort of mid-ranking talent of last year now play for somebody else. And there's a lot of new guys at Liverpool, Arsenal, Manchester City. It's very hard to predict. So are you resting everything still on Mo Salah, who last year set a record points total by a considerable distance in fantasy football?
Yeah, it was the most outrageous season ever.
I don't think we talk enough about fantasy football, considering how much everybody else in my life talks about it all the time.
And increasingly so, you'd have to say. Like, even now, I'm on the website. There are a total of 6.6 million players. Like, that is going to go up by a huge percentage tomorrow and on Friday morning when everybody's like, oh my God, it's fantasy football time. To already have 6.6 million players is insane. It seems to reach record highs every single year. Would you consider yourself a very good fantasy football manager? I know you're obviously very invested in it, but are you very good?
I make bad errors.
Okay.
Bad errors. So last year, and this haunted me for the entire season, you remember the Liverpool-Newcastle game? Was it just pre-Christmas, post-Christmas? And Alexander Isak was an injury doubt. And Chelsea had a very favourable run of games. And everybody in my league had Nicholas Jackson. But I had Alexander Isak. And I thought,
seems like a good
Isak
choice,
is injured, a doubt, and he's playing Liverpool. I'll just get rid of Isak and I'll bring Nicholas Jackson in. I think Isak scored 2 that night, and I think he scored maybe 10 in his next 9, and Nicholas Jackson didn't score for about 4 months. And, you know, I've spoken on this show before about the issues I once had with Football Manager and getting confused as to what was happening in the Football Manager game I was playing and real life when I was talking about football on the radio. Yeah. I was could barely sustain my anger towards Nicholas Jackson every time I was commentating on a Chelsea game. Dear God, that man ruined me. Absolutely ruined me.
Now, I've got your page open here.
Okay.
Ekitike Taka. It's a good name for a team. Nathan, well done. You're in there with a new signing.
Thomas the Frank Engine was taken. My son has that.
Okay. Your son's funnier than you. Good. Amazing.
I finished ahead of me last season.
I finished ahead of you. It wouldn't be hard though. Last season you finished 611,000 in the world.
Whoa. I think if you were to click in there, you'd find
I am about to go through your history here. I am about to give you your flowers. If that's what
I was doing very well until 3 weeks ago, and I wanted to win our money league.
Okay,
so I decided to take a few stupid risks, all of which backfired disastrously.
Outside the top million the previous season, around 1/4 million the previous year, 1/2 million the previous
year. You're not great on any of this.
There was a 1.5 million in 2018, 2019. However, you can scroll all the way back through Nathan Murphy's FPL history. 2007, 2008, the first year of Nathan Murphy taking part in FPL. His rank, 190th.
Wow.
In the world, 190th. And
it's been a steady decline ever since.
It literally has been a steady decline ever since. How on earth did you finish in the top 200 in the world in the official FPL game?
It was pre the obsession that's with fantasy football now, where everybody has these template teams. So anyone who doesn't follow fantasy football, last year in particular was particularly bad, the last couple of years, where you have any amounts of online accounts who basically decide this is the team you need to have. And everybody pretty much has the exact same team. And if you try and veer outside of that and you get it wrong, you're screwed completely. Yeah. And I tried to avoid what they were doing and do my own thing. And I was screwed completely. So that season, I think Manchester United were very good. I remember they beat Newcastle 6-0 one night. Cristiano Ronaldo scored a hat-trick. Carlos Tevez scored 2. Rio Ferdinand scored 1. Had all 3 of them. Ronaldo was captain.
Right.
That was a great night. I finished 190th overall. With 2 weeks to go, I think I was 32nd, and I was 2nd in Ireland.
Wow.
And again, you kind of got to go for it. And I'm fairly sure I signed Alfonso Alves and put him as my captain, second last week of the season. Now, this is my memory of it, so it may not stack up with reality. And I put him as captain, and everyone else had Cristiano Ronaldo as captain. And Ronaldo, again, just scored an insane amount of goals, did something special, killed me. And then the week after, Alfonso Alves scored 4 goals in the final day of the season.
Wow.
Alfonso Alves, of course.
What am I calling him?
Alfonso. Who could forget? Alfonso Alves.
Alfonso Alves, yes. Yeah, so I probably do spend... How many hours a week would you spend thinking about this? It dominates my weekend.
2 years ago, when I'd come back from travelling, I had the month of August off before starting work again. It just became an obsession that month. And that was a very... I think that was a good year. Last year, very little. It's just too much dedication. I'll start thinking about it tomorrow. John's been in touch to say Mo Salah, captain always. An unnamed texter says, glad Kelleher no longer plays for Liverpool. First choice goalkeeper this year in fantasy football.
I think Quevin Kelleher is the most popular goalkeeper.
Is he an injury doubt?
He's down yellow, but he has a knock. But he's surely going to be fine. Like, is Rayan Nouri going to play him, be this attacking genius for Manchester City that you just have to have? Or is Gvardiol still going to be the man? Morgan Rodgers is my favourite one. Not a lot of people have Morgan Rodgers. Also injury flagged. So too is Marc Guy, who I don't think is going to start this week. It's hard to get strikers when you go past Haaland. Watkins, I don't want to give away what my team is going to be.
Let us know, 0879-180-180. Help Nathan through his predictions.
Tell us what your best ever finish was.
Has anybody ever finished above 190th in the world? That is,
we had the winner. There was a guy from Galway won a couple of years ago. We had him on Off the Ball Breakfast.
Was that the season you were ringing up the Manchester United press office?
Listen, let's not. If Keith Andrews' phone is hopping on Friday night, it won't be looking for any great insight.
Tell me about this yellow.
Listen, Queeveen, when we're saying a knock, what are we actually talking about here? Is Nathan Collins going forward for every corner kick, Keith?
Yeah. Nathan Collins, captain in Ekitike Taka this week, game week one, I think. Where do you want to take us next, Cameron?
Well, the Premier League chief executive has said they have to be patient in their legal case against Manchester City. So they hit the eight-time champions with more than 115 in fact, of alleged financial rule breaches back in 2023, something that the club denies. Richard Masters was out today and says that the confidential process means that he can't shed any light on when the outcome from an independent panel will be delivered. Some other football news as well today. AC Milan confident of signing Manchester United striker Rasmus Højlund on a loan deal. That's according to reports in Italy, which say the deal would include an option to buy of around €447 million. The Danish international has scored just 26 goals in 95 appearances for the Premier League club. You've the Super Cup tonight, Paris Saint-Germain against Tottenham, kicking off in the Italian city of Udine at 8 o'clock. And goalkeepers could give away a corner if they hold on to the ball for longer than 8 seconds this season. It's one of the main changes to the laws of the game brought in by the PGMOL. Chief Operating Officer and former Premier League official Howard Webb told Sky Sports News earlier that it's designed to clamp down on time wasting.
We've known, of course, that the laws have said forever that the keeper can hold the ball for 6 seconds, but you never saw that being penalised. And referees were allowing goalkeepers to hold the ball for longer. If you did penalise the goalkeeper, it came as a huge surprise, was highly controversial. So I think there was an understanding that we needed a reset around that aspect. Of course, when the goalkeeper's holding the ball, it's the only time it's not available to any other player and the clock is still ticking down. So the lawmakers had a look at it and decided that they would change from 6 seconds to 8 seconds. And if the goalkeeper hadn't released the ball after 8 seconds, then possession would transfer to a corner to the other team. Now, it's not meant to be punitive, it's meant to be preventative. It's all about getting the ball back into play. So far, we've seen it in a few games in the EFL and obviously in some other tournaments during the summer. The referees will look at when the keeper collects the ball, control possession, the attackers are not hindering his ability to release the ball, and at that point, the count will start and they'll indicate 5 seconds with their arm so the keeper knows where they are. And then if the keeper holds the ball for longer than eight, then the corner will be given. But so far, the keepers have responded well. The ball's back into play. And it's all about that flow and momentum of the game, I guess.
That'll feel a bit different when this happens for the first time.
So is the reality that when the goalkeeper picks the ball, the referee is going to count to three in his head and then go hand out 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and the entire crowd joins in?
Yeah.
You'd need to be a bit pretty idiotic goalkeeper not to kick the ball out in time.
Yeah.
Or are they just going to forget when to start and the 5 second countdown begins when the referee eventually just runs out of patience?
And I guess kicking to touch might come into things as well, because if you're on 1 second and you're trying to waste time, you're panicking. What are you doing? You're kicking for a throw-in because you're going to concede a corner. So I think that would be the outcome. I'm trying to war game what a cynical goalkeeper would do in that situation. Cameron did mention the Super Cup, which is kicking off at 8 o'clock, just to go through the teams here. Tottenham Hotspur starting with Vicario in goal. It is a back three of Van de Ven, Romero, Kevin Danso via live score. Jed Spence, Pedro Porro on the wings. Pape Sarr, Joao Palinha, Rodrigo Bentancur in midfield. Kudus and Richarlison up front. So I'm not sure how accurate that formation is. For Paris Saint-Germain, it's Chevalier in goal, of course. Donnarumma on the way out of the club. It seems it's a backline of Hakimi, Marquinhos, Pacho and Mendes. Warren's Aguirre-Emery. Vitinha is in midfield alongside Desiree Doué, who's going to play a little further forward, you'd have to say. And then Bradley Barcola, Ousmane Dembele and Kvaratskhelia Kvaratskhelia up front for Paris Saint-Germain. So this is pretty exciting. Feels like a kind of a community shield on a European front. Low stakes game, but excitement with regards to how both of these teams are going to play.
Yeah, a bit like community shield as well. Probably a bit more important for Tottenham than it is for Paris Saint-Germain. Now, maybe Paris Saint-Germain are at that level where they're thinking, we want to win absolutely everything we possibly can while we're in this period of dominance and show Europe that we are, without question, the unstoppable force. But for Tottenham, it's a huge opportunity. And yeah, they've got their injury problems at the moment, particularly in the attacking midfield positions. But interesting to see where Kudus fits in. No Dominic Solanke, so it looks as though they're going to be going with Richarlison leading the line to start the season, unless, you know, Solanke gets a bit of game time off the bench. It's all coming together a little bit late for Spurs. You know, Savinho, potential. Eberechi Eze. Does Eze want to go to Spurs, or are they just trying to dangle it there to get Arsenal to get a move on? Like Eze could go either way, in that he feels like he could be a Spurs player, beautifully gifted, technically as good as it gets, but has yet to really show it on the very highest level. Whereas, does he come into Arsenal and, like, does he play on the left-hand side in that Arsenal team?
I think in a world where you're building a team from scratch, or if PSR is no object, Eze would be an amazing rotation option as a left-sided player to actually properly challenge Martinelli. But he is 27 years of age. It feels like limited upside in the long term, given we've probably already seen him close to his peak.
And also with the investment they've made in Yorkes, a player who's not early 20s either, are they going to make that investment again on somebody, as you say, who probably in 3 years' time to 4 years' time there's not going to be much sell-on value, but also maybe you just need to look short-term right now and win the league.
Yeah, but I suppose that's what the Yorkes signing is.
And do whatever it takes. I think for Eze, if it was a choice between Arsenal and Tottenham, it's obviously a no-brainer. You're going to go to Arsenal every day of the week. But, you know, this Tottenham project could become interesting quite quickly. Still wonder about Solanke, Richarlison as your front two. But if you have Kudus, Eze, Savinho playing as the three in behind, maybe you're just going to get loads of chances. And João Palhinha is going to be a big, big player for them this season. Like, he needs to find the form of before he went to Bayern Munich and be able to sort of man that midfield almost by himself. It does look like it's going to be three at the back. You know, Danzo's there now in a permanent transfer. He was on loan from Lens at the end of last season. They made it permanent. Can they keep Van de Ven and Romero fit? There was a bit of speculation about Romero earlier in the summer, but now he's going to be the club captain. Again, ceiling for all of this very high from Tottenham, but you struggle to get out of your head that they lost 22 games last season.
They have to be better defensively.
And maybe that's, you know, Thomas Frank's in a nice position coming in, because while expectations won't be massively low, they're also not what they were in recent years, which is, ooh, we should be in the Champions League every season from our league position. You know, I think if they were to be back in the mix for that, most Spurs fans would be pretty happy come the end of this year and do something in the Champions League, have a couple of decent nights there.
Should also inform you guys that to celebrate the return of the Premier League, Off the Ball has teamed up with William Hill to bring you the final one standing. So you could be walking away with $2,500 in cash by joining the Off the Ball League. So it's free to enter. You can just click on the link that's across our social channels, or you can download the William Hill app and you'll find the final one standing game on the app. The code is Off the Ball, all capitals, all one word, and that will bring you into our private league. And it's basically the same as Last Man Standing. People will be familiar with that. You pick one team per run on this. You can only pick a team once, and if your team wins, you survive until the next week. I think this week everybody is going for Liverpool, Nathan.
Well, as a world-leading contender through the years on fantasy football, I feel I'm of a mind to give expert opinion on that. When it comes to last man standings, my record isn't quite as strong. So I am the go for the obvious from week one. So yes, go Liverpool this week. I think it might be go Arsenal next week. And just try and survive for as long as you can and hope that other people take the risks. I don't know if that's the way to go. Maybe actually what you do is you sort of go half and half this weekend. Maybe you go for a Manchester United, or you go for Nottingham Forest at home to Brentford, and then you hope that Liverpool don't win and half the people involved are gone.
It's a risky strategy. I've never played this before, so I'm not really sure how exactly to do it.
But you're going for Liverpool, are you?
Well, I mean, Tottenham at home to Burnley could be an interesting one this weekend. I will very studiously study Tottenham Hotspur tonight against Paris Saint-Germain and decide where my pick shall go.
Of course, one of the many benefits owned for Tottenham winning the Europa League is that they get to play in the Champions League. They get to play in the European Super Cup tonight against Paris Saint-Germain. And they also don't have to play in the south section of the Carabao Cup.
Well, that's happening right now.
So the draw has just been made for round two. There's a lot of interesting teams in there, such as Mansfield, who are going to play Everton. Bolton or Sheffield Wednesday, who'll play Leeds. Grimsby, who'll play Manchester United.
Oh, wow.
So the European teams. I've actually watched round one of the League Cup a couple of weeks ago. You'll remember you had Dean Brennan on and Barnett had been playing against Newport. Mm-hmm. They had to play a preliminary round because there was so many English teams in Europe that couldn't play in round two. They ended up having to have a preliminary round before round one. But Manchester United are going to be one of the teams in round two of the Carabao Cup. They're in the northern section. So they're going to play Grimsby. Everton are up against Mansfield. Leeds against Sheffield Wednesday are Bolton. Preston against Wrexham. That's a big game these days now, isn't
it? Yeah, for sure.
That's a big game. Wrexham, we were watching this last night. Scored twice in injury time. They managed to win on penalties.
Oh, I saw this come up on social media.
So they were in a lot of trouble, but they managed to survive. And that's kind of as exciting as it gets. Oh, Bournemouth against Brentford, an all Premier League clash.
Okay.
So, and Wolves against West Ham.
There you go.
Wolves are in the south section. I would have said Wolves is more northern.
Well, you can ponder that. One other thing I did want to ask you about, Shamrock Rovers, Balkany, as Cameron mentioned earlier in the news round. Lots of pressure now as a result of, we spoke about the Jack Byrne thing earlier on. Are you putting your eggs in that we're going to have two teams in the Conference League basket here, or what's your prediction at this juncture?
I think it's hard to put all your eggs in that basket with the draw that Shamrock Rovers have been given, like a team to finish fifth in the Portuguese league, albeit behind four giants in terms of Braga, Sporting Lisbon, Porto and Benfica. But still, obviously, to get to that level, they must have something about them. It's not the most star-studded team. They've often been a yo-yo club, I think, in Portuguese football, but it's still going to be an incredibly tough game if they get through tomorrow night. Shamrock Rovers, apparently, they'll have way more European experience. And maybe that Conference League run has got them so much experience of what's required at that level that they can cause what would be one of the biggest shocks, I think, and would be up there, one of the great results for Irish football if they could go through. For Shelburne, let's see what happens. They're going to play at Talca Park, which is big. They thought when they were beaten by Carabag that they were going to be out in Tala for the rest of the games, but they were able to play in Talca Park last night. Obviously undone by the returning players and a couple of spectacular goals. But they're going to be able to play in the next round as well at Talca Park. And I think against Linfield or a team from the Faroe Islands, you'd have to expect that they should have enough to come through that. And also the way I think they've been performing so far in Europe has been at a really, really good level. So. I
mean, last night was outrageously unlucky, given the three goals they conceded, particularly the second one. I mean, I don't know how far you've got to go back to see a collection of goals of that quality scored in a League of Ireland ground or in any ground around the world, because it was just, there was a lot of fortune, like, as I say, second, third goals of the top drawer.
Yeah, there were. And then to get back into the game and to have the chance and to concede so quickly afterwards. Yeah, just very frustrating. Very frustrating. Like, we knew there was more quality coming back into the Rijeka team. And we spoke about it beforehand and Fruit coming in. And, it looked like he was almost single-handedly able to make a massive difference. But their intention at the start would have been Conference League football. And Vikinger or Linfield, whichever one of them it is, like, Shelburne will be favourites to come through that.
Yeah, it's a good situation. Very, very disappointing night last night, but they're still in a very, very good situation. Nathan, thank you for that. We shall see you at the Sugar Club tomorrow evening.
Yeah, and then in our box at Oasis on Saturday night.
Hopefully. We'll see how things play out.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.